Hey, welcome back to the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. This is your host, Tim Hunzi, and our guest for this episode is none other than Zeb Luster. He is the Executive VP and Artist Manager over at River House Artists, and I'm telling you, we deep dive into artist development. He drops a lot of beautiful nuggets on how to work on growing your brand, building out your fan base. I think you're going to really, really enjoy this episode. So as I like to say, sit back and enjoy the ride, my friends. My friend Zeb, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Of course, dude. Super pumped to have you. Let's start with a little background. I know that you jumped here from Florida and you hit music road running. And why don't you give us a little quick bio of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably take up this whole podcast telling you my journey to Nashville, but I will not do that. I'll keep it brief. But I grew up in a agriculture-based family. All I really knew was showing animals and livestock and the crop production of the world, like growing watermelons and cantaloupes and all of those things that my family and their friends did growing up. And so I went to college to get an ag degree so that I could work in sales and hopefully one day sell vet medicine or chemicals to farmers for a living. I thought that would be an easier way of life than actually being a farmer. And when I moved to college, I went to college in South Georgia, which has an incredible ag school. And I quickly learned that everyone in South Georgia plays guitar and writes songs. And so my roommates, people down the hall, everyone was playing a guitar. And I quickly learned, like, wait, music is a real thing that you don't just hear on radio. And people move to Nashville just to write songs. And this sounds way cooler than what I'm doing. So I did what my parents wanted me to do. And I got a degree and I went and worked in the tobacco industry for a few years after college, while staying in touch with people who were moving to Nashville, like Cole Taylor and Farron Rachels and Ray Fulcher and many people from Georgia. And then I, you know, started coming to visit on my company car, gas card that I had with a corporate company. And Ray introduced me to Luke Combs and many other people that were in town that were just trying to make things work. And I just fell in love with the community and the town. And like an idiot, I had no plan, but I quit my job and moved here. I went to work at Comcast Business, selling cable door to door to pay the bills, and met with everyone who would take a meeting with me when I was supposed to be working, just to try to get a job. And it took me about 2.5 years, but Lynn Oliver Klein took a gamble on me. She had signed Luke to the label and Ray Fulcher to a publishing deal and needed someone to organize songs and be the coordinator. So I took a job on a 90-day trial and came to work for Lynn, and I'm still here.
That's a hell of a story. I love that. Thanks for sharing. I was aware of it, but I don't think I've known anybody coming from so far left into the music business like you did from that. I mean, it makes sense because it's everything we sing about. And, you know, tobacco is a big deal when you work there here, obviously. But
I couldn't get anyone to pay attention to me because I didn't have a music degree. I didn't go to Belmont. I didn't have a network of industry people that I knew. I just knew a handful of songwriters who now are really successful, thankfully, because they kind of, I got to ride their coattail a bit to get into the business. But I was just trying to take meetings and no one would really pay attention. So one day I had taken a meeting at Universal Publishing, and the person who was in charge of that is no longer there. But I had an interview and I went and sat down, and it was for the tape room position at the time. And I went in very eager. I was asking how quick I could be promoted, and I wanted to be a creative director and all these things. And, you know, I think they just looked at me like, this kid is not going to do the job for what we need. And it was really because I came from a corporate salary, and what a tape room person was making was like a third of what I was making at 24. And so I was like, I can't do this. So anyways, I didn't get the job. I walked down the street. I went into a bar. I was waiting on some of my songwriter friends to get done with their write that afternoon so that we could hang out. And I was sitting in this bar called Whiskey Rhythm, which is now an ice cream place. But the owners were in there and they were just talking about how they needed to have some more events go on there to keep the doors open. And I was the only person at the bar. They're sitting there talking about it. And they were like, we need more live music. And I was just like, what if I put on like a songwriter round here? And it was just the right time. You know, they needed someone. I was sitting there. No one else is in the bar. I overheard their conversation. We started talking. And I was like, I'll do three nights, you know, once a month. I don't know that many songwriters, but I could do once a month. And I bet I could get 50 people in here. And the first one, I went back and looked at the flyer the other day. It was like January of 2017, I did it. And I had Ashley McBride and Luke Combs and Corey Crowder and Randy Montana on the first round. and I was just like laughing now, right? I think Travis Denning was also on there. But I just like called everyone that I knew, and they like, I gave someone each a round and they brought two of their friends, and it turned into a thing. And like, I just did it once a month because I didn't think I knew enough people. And that round went on for 8 years. And I just stopped it this year. I'm not saying it's never going to come back, but life has been so busy, and I would much rather go out having a legacy that like had great writers on it than not, just to continue to do it. And it's not as good as it used to be. So I took a pause on it for now. And, you know, that round introduced me to everyone in town. I remember I thought it was such a huge deal that Leslie Roberts came to like one of the first rounds because she works at BMI. And I was like, there's my contact to everyone in Nashville, you know. And like, I just started to meet everyone and meet the writers. I was a person who was supporting all these artists early on and didn't want anything from them. And now I see how important that is in the industry. Like, everyone has a little bit of traction online, and all of these A&R people, myself included, are reaching out to them. And it was just a different perspective, and like someone who was like championing what they were doing. And that was truly what I was trying to do. Like, I wanted to meet people in town and create a network of my own friends. But also, I just believed in the songwriters. That's why I'm here. And I believe that songs make artists. And that was what I wanted to do, was support them. And it really built the foundation for me to meet everyone in town. And I'm so thankful that I did that. Alongside that was a clothing brand that me and my brother created. And that's where the Why Not name came from. But yeah, I'm very thankful that I attached myself to that and created that, because that was literally the gateway for me to get into the business.
I think most people know Whiskey Jam. I mean, that's such a branded thing, but that you were on par with the early Whiskey Jam, where you were real focused on, you could be an artist, but really songwriters, as you said, and Whiskey Jam was really more focused on artists specifically, that those two brands at the same time are really revitalized a lot of Nashville and getting the community out. So, man, I still have the utmost respect for what you started and built, and especially that hustle coming in from out of town and building that, man. So that's where I knew, it's like, this guy is going to do something. And you, I always had great, I will add, like, I thought those rounds, were, anytime I went, it was A-list, like, it was always great. Like, you were on the cusp of, like, the next round. You'd have the signed writers, of course, but, man, there was always young writers in there that you were like, this person's going to get a deal, or people I may not have signed, too. So, kudos to that. But let's pivot a little bit to talking some about Riverhouse, where you now currently work, as you stated, and now, describe Riverhouse. It's not just for songwriters. You have the artists, you have management, you have publishing kind of in-house, but walk us through what Riverhouse is and does currently.
Yeah, I'm actually happy that we're talking artist development, because I feel like artist development has been the backbone of this company and why we've grown so much. This is 10 years, just over 10 years of Riverhouse. Thankfully, I've been a part of 8 of those. I came on board just shy of 2 years after Lynn started the company. And I came in, like I was saying earlier, as a publishing coordinator for her. We had Rafe Holter and Rob Williford, who wrote many, many of the Luke Combs hits. And I got to work on their calendars and learn truly from the ground up how to be a publisher. And we signed writer after writer, Driver Williams. We just celebrated a number one with him. He was one of our early writers. Nicolette Hayford, who wrote many of the Ashley McBride songs and much more, has been here for a long time as well. And Drew Parker, and we've had a very great success with our publishing company. And that was the backbone, right? And I think I might have been part of the problem when it came to how artist development came into the building, because I just love these young artists. I believe that's why I did my round. That's also why I love publishing so much. We signed quite a few young artists, and we were developing them without even really saying we were developing them from the publishing side, like most publishers do. And from there, we created a label imprint. Lynn had first signed Luke Combs with Sony, and that was the first deal that we had. And then we created an imprint with Sony for a few years that had Jamison Rogers and Georgia Webster and a few others on that imprint. And now our label imprint is through Warner Records, and we have Hudson Westbrook and Austin Snell signed to it. So that model was created because we were signing young artists on the publishing side, and that's how the evolution of River House has happened. And so we have a label, we have a thriving publishing company, and now most recently in the last 2 years, we have created a management division that I am overseeing, because some of these artists that we have built from the ground up just trust our team and trust what we're doing and would prefer to utilize our team on the management side instead of going outside and finding other management. So I wear many hats, but it is because I truly love the songs and I love the artist, and I want to make sure that they're protected at all cost and can creatively do what they want to do and be supported and feel supported.
Yeah, I love that. That is a very similar. I sat with a young creative director of a publishing company one time who was also, we were discussing this same thing, artist development, because it's a skill and an art that's outside it. Most publishers do get into that because you're the one that might identify, you're like, oh, that guy can write songs and is an artist or girl, and you sign them, and then you work with them on both skills, being a better writer and an artist. And so I was sitting with this young guy, and he laid out all these plans, and his whole thing was, we're going to do publishing, we're going to do management, and we're going to do production deals. And they had this act, and I was like, he was very excited about this act. It was a little band called Florida Georgia Line. And I will say that he executed his plan from when he told me before all of it hit perfectly. And they did pivot one thing. They held on to management, but the production really switched, because we talked about labels are so expensive and difficult, but they did pivot, and the label has done extremely well over Big Loud, for those that aren't sure who I'm talking about. Seth England was a young man, but I see you guys as an infancy, not infancy, that's the wrong word. I see you guys in that same position of building out in a instrumental way to continue to add services and value to the clients that you're signing. And I think that's so important and needed in our industry to continue to be there and support this talent, because this isn't a shot at majors at all, because they are very needed, but the time it takes to really develop an artist is really difficult. So I want to throw this question to you, because we used the word a bunch already, artist development. What does that mean to you? How do you perceive that, and what is involved in that for you?
Yeah, I think artist development is truly helping the artists figure out who they are, what they want to say, and what makes them have their own lane in a really noisy industry right now. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of songs coming out. Some of them aren't even by real artists, right? So it's like, how do you create brand awareness for yourself, which is kind of funny. This goes back to the tobacco world, right? There's 1,000 options for Copenhagen or something that you smoke or dip. But like, how do you create a brand that's a premium product that people always go back to? And so I think that is really, for me, the definition of artist development is, who are they and how do we get you to where you want to go? And so we do that in-house. I think it all, like I said, it all starts with songs. And going back to our, even though we have a label, a management company, and a publishing company that I hope is as successful as Big Loud one day, I think I want to make it clear that not everyone has to be signed to everything, right? Like, we have some people that are just here for publishing. We have some people that are here for label, but not for management. We don't want to do all things for everybody. I want it to be the right fit. And if they have great people on their team that are outside of our building, we absolutely want to support that and grow with that. But I think for us on the artist development side, the first thing we do is make sure they're in the writing room with the right writers. We connect them with our creative team. We talk about who they are as an artist, all the way down to what they wear, what they want to say, what their aesthetic is. Are they going to use caps or no caps in the text that they're putting out on socials? Like, all the way down to the tedious things that most of us don't even think about. But they go through all of this. We build a brand book. We pick color palettes. We put together Pinterest boards on what clothes they want to wear and all those things. And we do this before we even release music, help them figure out who they are and what they want to say. And that evolves over time. I think Austin Snell is a great example in our building of like, he came in, I want to do this grunge rock thing. I want to be this rock guy. And it worked really well. And then quickly he realized he's so talented and there's so many different facets of who he is as an artist. And he wants to showcase that and not just put himself in one box. It's called grunge country. So we've been evolving his brand, right? And other people like Hudson Westbrook come in and know exactly who he is at the age of 19, which is still mind-blowing to me. And we just run with it and it's been super successful. But all of that comes from setting it up from the ground up with the songs, with the look, with the plan. And I think once you get rolling in a very noisy business that we're in, you have to keep rolling. And I heard this from someone and I wish I could credit them, and I can't remember who said this, but I use it all the time. The fans and the artists have a relationship like we're sitting in a dining room table or in a busy restaurant having dinner, right? They have to have a relationship with that fan, whether it's one fan, 10 fans, 10,000 fans, or 10 million fans. Like, you have to create a relationship with them and you have to keep their attention. So we start with one fan, but it's like, pretend like the artist is having dinner with that fan and the busiest restaurant in Nashville. You have to continue to feed them content, music, keep their attention, like continue to talk to them in some way online. And if they're like, you have to have eye contact with them all the time. If you slow down, they look somewhere else at someone walking by you or whatever's going on behind you, you lose their attention and they're on to the next thing. And like, that's kind of our approach here is like, let's just make a plan. Let's take the time to get it right. And then let's go and let's don't slow down because people are paying attention to you. And if you slow down or do anything that allows them to lose concentration on what you're doing, somebody else is going to have their attention and we're going to have to start all over.
What really stood out to me is what I don't think a lot of people understand is the depth and the level of what artist development truly looks like. It's more than just finding the right songs, which is a huge part of it, obviously, but the branding part these days to really cut through the noise. And I love that you mentioned, you know, is it going to be lowercase or caps or how are you? Like, working with a couple different labels now over here at Big Machine, and, you know, we work with High, but just seeing the attention to detail, even the font, the brand, the story, how you talk to your fans is, and we can take artists outside of this, like ones that have done it well. Like, if you look at a Megan Maroney, just so from an early, we were meeting with her before she had her deal, and she already understood all this, which is pretty astounding for an artist, as you know. A lot of times you're helping guide them into it, but she understood everything you're saying and had this vision that she's rolling out very successfully of even the colors and the fans, and they are just eating it up. But it's really hard to cut, as you said, above the noise because there is so much competition. Do you have, like, let's just pretend we're talking to some up-and-coming artists. Like, what is the best advice you can give somebody to help them identify what that is in them, how to cut outside this noise and stand above? Because there is unlimited talent out there. All the TV shows have showed us that. There are so many people out there. And but artists are a different thing to me. And now I want to clarify because everybody's going to go, well, they are artists. I think being an artist is a different thing and an entertainer. Like, you might be able to hit all the notes, but to have that unique thing that attracts people, Hudson's a good example, just to keep it in-house on this combo for Riverhouse, is that kid, from the moment you meet him, you get it. You're like, oh, he's got the thing. You see him live, you get the thing. And he is building this brand, and it is moving fast for him. So what is the advice you have to somebody trying to, you know, build that out? Like, because you guys have really been very successful with the artists you've signed, been able to, obviously not everyone has probably worked to the level you wanted, but you are really crushing the game right now. So what is some good advice you can give?
Yeah, I think, there is some things working, and I'm very thankful that you say that. Also, I feel like there's some of the best singers, like you said, and artists in town who really have a brand, and it just didn't connect. I think, first of all, there has to be a little luck with it, right? You can have all the things in place, but the stars also have to align. And that's the hardest part because that's out of our control. But I would say consistency. I know you have always been big on fitness. And like, I would say like, that's the thing in the gym too, right? It's like when you're consistent with how you're eating or what you're doing, you see results. I think the biggest thing for artist development is consistency. And these, it's so hard for a creative person to stay consistent when they feel defeated. And I think that is what we have to do every week, is like give a beacon of hope to these artists that they are doing the right thing and things are moving. And I think they have to untangle their mind from thinking that every video has to go viral. Like if a video gets 3,000 views, that's 3,000 people on TikTok that might not have seen you before. Like I think it's all about building consistency with them. And like, first of all, yeah, you start with like the key foundation, the pillars of who you are as an artist. What is your look going to be like? What is your sound going to be like? You know, all of the things that are important, build the foundation and then just run with it, right? And like, be consistent, post every day, show your personality, show your style of music. You don't have to have music to post online. You can build with your personality. You can build with cover songs. You can do all kinds of different things. And there's so many great independent artists that have did that, you know, and built a brand and fans by just being consistent. And that's something for me, I feel like the most important part is just continuing to move forward every day. What are you putting up for content? How are you doing that? Like, I think I answered this question. I might have got off on a tangent, but like, those for me are the things that I think are the most important. Like, how do you be consistent? Because so many times and so often you see great artists, they go in, they cut 5 songs for an EP. They have their mind wrapped around this project, but they don't know what's next. And they start to tease it and they're already tired of the songs by the second song that comes out. So they don't tease it as hard as they did the first song. And then the EP comes out and it doesn't deliver in their mind based on the expectations that they have. And that's a constant conversation I'm having with our team. It's like, set the expectation for the artist to not expect anything. And when we do have wins, then we can celebrate them. When you celebrate with them big because of wins that they have, they feel like they are winning. It's all about like making sure that they understand what is a win and what is an unrealistic expectation, because they're in such a comparison world right now. It's very hard for them to know what to expect, or unless they have someone helping them do that. So it's just like, how do you be consistent and continue to build and know that like the first project for so many artists, probably 90% of artists, it's not the thing that breaks them.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzey, and this has been a Dime Collective production.